We are rolling live. Okay, so we begin a new siman. We finished last week, Reish Tamaches, which had lots of laws about particularly the end of this siman, talked about the laws of the Friday night tefillah in shul. We talked a lot about the bracha mein sheva, the bracha that we make after, that the chazan makes after Shmona Esrei is over. Hopefully, by the way, everyone this week during Vayechulu had a new kavana about why do we do this thing in the first place. It's there just in case once or twice a year there's a Shabbat that falls out on Yom Tov, and then you wouldn't say Vayechulu in the Amidah, so we want to catch it afterwards. And so because of that, we say it every week. That's really the reason that we do it. So we talked about a lot of these different scenarios. Now we talk about another thing that happens in shul on Friday night. And this is the Reish Samech Tes, Din HaKiddush Beveis HaKnesses, the law of the Kiddush in the shul. And what's interesting about this is that it is, this does have a source. This practice does go back a ways. It is mentioned in Arvei Pesachim, in the 10th chapter of Pesachim, when Rav and Shmuel are having an argument about the topic of, until we emerges from the sugya, whether or not Kiddush has to be done by Makom Seuda or not. So you have to make Kiddush where you're going to eat or not, which is going to be a topic we're going to get to very shortly in Hilchos Shabbos, which is a fascinating, fun topic. But in that realm, Rav brings up the case, or the Gemara really brings up the case that, if I remember the words correctly, is Osam ben Adam Shekidshu Beis HaKnesses, that those people who make Kiddush and Shul, Rav Amar, Rav says, Yedeyayin Lo Yatsu Yedey Kiddush Yatsu. He says that with regards to the Borei Priyag Ofen, if I stay in one place, I'm in Shul, and I hear the Borei Priyag Ofen, or I even make the Borei Priyag Ofen, whatever, and then I want to go home and have more wine, I have to make a Borei Priyag Ofen again. Because when you move places, your bracha rishona doesn't travel with you. Unless you have a kavana, it's a whole... But generally speaking, we don't assume that if, you know, Richie makes a cup of bracha on the cup of coffee right here, he just makes a shahakol here, and then he has a whole class, and he's still nursing this coffee, and then he goes home, he might actually make a new bracha on it. Possibly, if he never had any intention, if you know you're going to take your cup of coffee to go, right? You buy it at a store, you take the first sip in the store, but you know, then of course, yeah, but if he thought he was going to finish his cup of coffee here, then it's very questionable, and it may probably likely that he needs to, that if he's has what's called a shinui makom, he changes location, he now needs to make a new bracha. It's almost like a new situation of eating or drinking in this case, because of the change of location. Again, if there's a kavana in mind from the beginning that I will be drinking or eating this on the go, that's a very different story than that was from the outset how you intended it. It's an interesting topic. Also comes up there in Arvei Pesachim.
What is, what if he always has two cups a day? He right. Says, this is my first cup.
Oh, and I'm going to still have another one. Is there? It depends a little bit also on the time gap. Time does matter here because... if you're not going to have any sips of coffee another cup of coffee. Yeah, I think that if he has one cup of coffee here and then he has another cup of coffee home, it's another bracha. Yeah.
Even if he always has two cups.
Yeah. 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 If he's...
He always has six or seven cups.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how he gets to the day. Okay. All right. So, yeah, Simeon.
Rob, we learned previously, I think it's a little further on, that Ein Kiddush Ela B'Makom Seuda.
Yes.
The Ein Seuda Ela B'Yeshiva.
Right.
So I never understood. They said it's for guests, but unless the whole shul is davening in a dining room somewhere, it's not B'Makom Seuda.
It is for
something. So we're going to explain this. This is an excellent question and an excellent point that we're going to discuss. And by the way, that last part of that Gemara that I was mentioning before is that Shmuel says that even the Kiddush bracha doesn't count for you. So of course, if the wine bracha doesn't help you to go home and drink wine, and the Kiddush bracha didn't help you, now you have to go home and make Kiddush again. That's what the Gemara talks about. So the Gemara's obvious question is, why did you make Kiddush in the first place in shul? And so that's where the Gemara answers, because of the Orchim, because of the guests who are passing through town, who presumably were actually staying and eating. Actually, the Gemara even explicitly says another thing about it. It says, the Shosu v'ochlu v'gonu b'beikinishta. It says that they're eating, sleeping, and drinking in the shul. That was where they were, that's where they were residing. Well, as they were passing through town, they happened to be there for Shabbos, so that was their place, and the Kiddush was for them. And then you have to go home and make Kiddush again for your family. So for Rav, the Kiddush did count, because he thinks Kiddush doesn't have to be in the place where you eat. So why do you have to make Kiddush again when you go home? Well, he says, because the family, they didn't go to shul, so you should make Kiddush again for them because they didn't hear the Kiddush. So what? Yeah.
Because he needs to make Kiddush and shul of the bayah, you know, and the royal.
Yeah.
The reason they're making Kiddush because there may be somebody in the Kehillah there who doesn't make Kiddush and should have at least hear Kiddush.
But they should hear Kiddush. They should be.
My grandfather was orphaned.
Yeah.
He actually lived in, and then he was a cheder brat.
Oh, so he lives in the shul. Right.
Brought him whatever scraps of food they had left over.
Wow.
They brought him whatever clothing they had
right.
that was outgrown.
So the shul, yeah. So today it's not as common that that a shul is used as such a place where the people who are passing through town or those who are in need and don't have a place, that the shul was a place where they resided. So it's not so done, not such a common practice today. I'm acknowledging that maybe not that long ago that was different. I wonder if pre you know Shoah, you know, communities yeah. in Europe where this was maybe more common that people passing through, or there were, as you mentioned, Hinda mentioned, people who didn't have resources to even have a roof over their head. This was a place that they stayed. But today it's become, has completely fallen out of practice to usually have people will, you know, set them up in a house in the neighborhood or something else. That was certainly the practice. And this practice, as I mentioned, goes back to the Gemara, that there was already this idea that Orchim stayed in the shul. And that's why I brought to the preamble, give this preamble, because this is not a newer minhag. This is actually quite an old minhag. Again, that goes back to the Talmud. So take a look now at Sif Aleph, which is the only Sif here in this Siman, Reish Tamach Tes. Here we go. Nohagin lekadesh bebeis hakneses. There is a minhag to make Kiddush in the shul on Friday night. That's right. And this halacha is mentioned in the tour. But this is already also mentioned that there's, you know, but this minhag, I gotta say, goes back even before that. The Ein Lamikadesh Lito Miyain Hakiddush Ela Masimo Likoton. This Kiddush, the Mikadesh, the one who's making the Kiddush, should not taste from the wine that he makes the Kiddush on. Rather, he should give it for the child to taste. Some child should taste it, not the one who makes Kiddush. Why shouldn't the one who made Kiddush take a sip? That would make more sense. That person makes the bracha should drink a little bit. And he says here, the ain Kiddush ala bimkom se'uda, because a Kiddush only counts. Kiddush only works. You're only yotzei Kiddush in the place where you eat your se'uda. And you're not eating your se'uda here. So for you to take a sip of this wine would be eating, would be, or in this case, drinking, before, it's like drinking before Kiddush. Because you're not really on Friday night supposed to eat, or by the way, or even take a drink of water, really. You're not supposed to taste anything until you make Kiddush. Kiddush after you start Shabbat should be the first thing you taste, the Kiddush wine, or you don't have to drink, by the way, the Kiddush wine. It's not the Mekadesh, the one making the Kiddush can drink, and you can be Yotzei through that, but you're not supposed to eat or drink until a Kiddush is made. And now here I am tasting some wine in a way where it doesn't even count for Kiddush. So this is, since it's Sunday, we'll use a football analogy here. This is a false start. You've started eating and drinking before the play has started, before an eligible Kiddush was made. Kiddush has to register as a check mark, Kiddush b'mokom suda, for me to then go forward with eating and drinking. This Kiddush doesn't check the box of Kiddush b'mokom su'uda. Therefore, me drinking and tasting the wine is illegal, right? It's against the rules.
So I have two questions.
Yeah.
Number one, you're saying, you're not drinking. And number two, if it doesn't count, then it's a bracha l'va tefas.
Yeah. Excellent. Oh, we're going to get to that question. Big time.
That's why you have kidrin.
Right. So here, so at least for the bar of your goffin, you're making, now, you say, someone should ask the question, though. Any other time, if I make a bar of your goffin or any bracha, I make a mizonos, I make whatever. I cannot, when I'm at home, make a mizonos on the cookie that my child is going to eat. That doesn't work. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. I cannot make a kid a mizonos for my kid for him to him or my for my daughter to make to eat a cookie. But here is a different scenario. Because whenever you have wine connected to a birchas hamitzvah, so I'll give a few examples. Number one, under a chuppah. The rabbi makes the bracha borei pri agafen under the chuppah and the bracha for the erusin. And who drinks it? Not the rabbi. The chassan and the kal take a sip. When you're at a brith, I've many times I've made the bracha on the borei pri agafen and then I'll show you kidashi din beten, etc. And who drinks the wine? So I usually end up taking a tiny sip of the wine because someone has to. You made a borei pri agafen, someone has to take a tiny sip. There's no, by the way, there's no inyan, there's no idea at all when you're at a wedding or you're at a brith that you have to drink a cheekful. We'll talk about that a lot when we get into the laws of Kiddush, that you have to drink a certain amount. But here you can just take a sip. And that's, and then, because you can make a, if you eat a crumb, you have to make a bracha rishona first. So you take a sip of wine or grape juice. But there, what happens if the brith falls out on Yom Kippur? Your grandson was a Yom Kippur brith. So who's drinking the wine? So the what the Rama says, the baby drinks the wine. Right. The little sip, the little tiny sip that the baby makes. They dip the thing into the wine, and then you go. You know what? He was Yotze apparently through the Bar Pia Guffin, the fascinating halacha. But the baby is the one who drinks the wine. Now they do that anyways, but like that's the wine. He's the baby. I mean, he didn't say Amen, but. Who's listening? And he's the one the little 8-day baby is the one who drinks the wine. And so you don't have to only when a Bar Goffin is connected to a Birchas HaMitzvah, anyone who is related to the mitzvah can drink. That's why the Chassan and the Kala drink. The baby can drink. There are other scenarios where we're talking about Birchas HaMitzvah. Slipping my mind where we have a Bar Goffin with a Birchas HaMitzvah attached. But maybe I already gave you two examples, but the other one might be. No, the pigeon aven is not a good example. No, because also it's not connected. Mitzvah happens and then the wine happens. But basically, here's a kiddush example, so it's not a crazy idea that a child can taste this wine, and that should suffice because the child is in the parsha of the idea of Shabbos and. Where they are being sanctifying the Shabbos too. Like children have some, not obligation, but they have the idea of Shabbos applies to a child too. So for them to drink a little bit of the wine, not a crazy idea. We're going to see though there's a machlokas here. How old should the child be? So if that's your question, hang on for a second before we get to that discussion. So we're going to get to that question too. Yes, I'm very well aware because often I'm the one who ends up drinking the wine on Friday night here. Because there's no child, particularly in the summer months. I'm a Hashem. When the clock is now, the time is moving forward, I'll be able to bring my own children. But this is a big question that I deal with personally. So I'm very invested in this and understand this Indian very well. Friday night, I'm always drinking the wine. That became the standard here. By the way, we changed the minhag. one of the rabbis makes the kiddush always, and usually it was the chazan made it, which is it's fine this way or that way. But this way we don't have to deal with it. Sometimes people didn't want to drink the grape juice and this that. So I make the kiddush every week.
On Friday, so I passed the cup to Rabbi Schneider.
To Rabbi Schneider. Oh, a few weeks ago.
No, past Friday.
Because we had a separate minion, right? Separate. Oh, so you had him make it.
No kids there.
So you didn't want to
write somebody the rabbi makes grab, the kiddush,
right?
Just grab a kid and bring him down.
Right.
Thinking about that.
Yes. So you can't.
I didn't want to.
Yeah, to cop from the bar mitzvah. So look here. He says first of all, by the way, he says v'ayin lekavan simin reisha ayin gimel. I don't even think that's the Rama. I wonder if that's the printers here who added this in. not this printer, but more ancient printers. That's the whole siman we're going to get to very shortly about Kiddush b'mkom Seuda, and then the whole topic about what, you know, how far can your Kiddush travel? If I make Kiddush in the main shul, can I then have my food in the social hall? That's an interesting question, and we're going to see. It's a little bit of a focus. Obviously, we do that here in our shul, but it's not not so posh that that's actually the.
Like in the neighborhood, when they have these, down like
on Friday night.
Yeah, so the people hosting the minyan, they put out like a spread.
Yeah.
Right.
And the people aren't eating their suda there.
Right. But that might be eligible for that. We'll see. We're going to see how in this context suda is going to be defined. Right. So it's
usually there's no chali available.
Right. It's mezlai mezonos.
And they make kiddush on scotch.
On Friday night?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
no.
After
davening.
Oh, no. They should make Kiddush. Yeah. Shabbos morning Kiddush on alcoholic beverage is not unprecedented. The Taz talks about that. But Friday night, it's really, you have to have wine. Yeah. Okay.
I always bothered to get that they put out food. I never understood why.
Yeah. So the extent that you can encourage people to at least make kiddush on wine, that's better. We'll talk about the other thing, but
having an established Scarsdale minhag, and I think somebody should say something about it.
It doesn't happen in my house.
Doesn't happen in your house.
Everybody goes home. Thank you.
What?
Yeah, but you're spoiling your
So we're gonna see. We're gonna learn all about that topic, and we'll draw the lines about what's with the Eved, what's the Chatchila, and what's not okay. Okay, so here the Shulchan Aruch continues. Mikara lo niskan ela b'shvil orchem de achle v'shase b'bekin ishto lahotziyam idei chobasim. So literally, by the way, the Shulchan Aruch here is borrowing the language of the Gemara and Pesachim. And the real reason I know is because I've taught Pesachim for many years now. This parak. So that's why I can recognize the words here, being that even the fact that they say Bekin Ishta, which is the Aramaic for Beit Knesset.
That means that for people who want to say...
Correct. From Meikar means originally this was only established for the Orchim, for the guests who ate and drank in the shul. By the way, and as I said, the Gemara says, and slept. Okay, he didn't add that here. Lehotziyam yedei chovasam, in order to help fulfill their obligation of Kiddush, the Achshav, and now, okay,
1570.
Correct, and now, Afal gav de lo achle orchim bevei kanishta. Apparently, it was already not such a thing that orchim were eating in the shul, or maybe not at least with any regularity. Lo vot lahatakana, the takana is not nullified. This law, this rule is not nullified. And this is why, to this day, there is a custom to make Kiddush in the shul on Friday night. It is because of the Orchim, the guests. Now, there is something very sweet, al derech drush. This is not pshat. Al derech drush, there's a very sweet idea here that every Friday night we continue this minhag, which in most shuls in the United States of America, there's nothing to it. Nobody's eating here. And yet we still do it, but there's something sweet that we keep this idea that the community has a responsibility to take care of its guests and take care of those who need help. And that even though we don't actually are not helping anybody per se with that kiddush, but it is a communal reminder of our responsibility towards those who need help, whether they're passing through and they don't have, or they're continuously in need. So that is very sweet, al derech drush. But look what he says here. Aval Yoser Tov, Lahan Hikshalo Lakadesh Rebeis HaKnesses. It would be better if they did not make Kiddush in Shul. V'chein Minhag Eretz Yisrael, and this is the Minhag in Eretz Yisrael. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber was already aware, and he does move to Eretz Yisrael later in his life. I don't know if he wrote this when he was in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe he did, I don't know. The Minhag in Eretz Yisrael was not to make Kiddush in Shul on Friday night.
Excuse me.
Okay.
It's a beautiful shul and spot.
Yes.
Which is called the Mechaber Shul.
Mechaber Shul. Did they make Kiddush on Friday night?
I never davened on Friday night.
If anybody davened on Friday night?
I never seen Kiddush Friday night.
In Eretz Yisrael, they don't do it. It's not a thing. It's not a thing in Eretz Yisrael to make Kiddush on Friday night. Yeah, that's my recollection also. Right. What was that? They do not do it. Minhag Eretz Yisrael is not to make the Kiddush. And the Ramah adds in here, and this is fascinating, once we get to the reasoning. The minhag is to stand when they make Kiddush in Shul. Okay, we're going to talk about why in a moment. Why is fascinating. It will put all physical therapists out of business. you'll love it. Okay, Simi, I saw your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rav, you mentioned that he was in Israel. We're reading from the Shulchan Aruch, and that was Rav Yosef Karo in the early 1500s. Yeah. I wasn't aware that he went to Israel. Is that what we're talking
at
about?
Towards the end of his life, he lived in Tzfat.
Uh-huh.
It's a beautiful shul in Tzfat.
Yeah, Richie was just saying there's a shul called there, the Mechaber shul, that in Tzfat.
What did you say? Richie's going to take us all there?
Oh yeah, Richie's sponsoring the trip.
Let's go.
We'll do our shir.
One way,
and we'll do our shir every Sunday morning in the Mechaber shul.
Okay.
That's right.
Where did he come
from? He was living in Egypt. Yeah, he was living in Egypt. So he's, I think so, wasn't he?
The Rambam. Yeah.
Well, the Rambam certainly was. Hold on, let me. I'm making me worried. I said the wrong thing. Or maybe it's Spain. No, he was in Spain. Sorry.
He was also in Egypt.
Let's see here. Rabbi Yitzchak. Sorry, Yosef Karo.
He was kicked out of Spain in 1492, but somehow he got back
here. Rabbi Yosef Karo. Okay, yeah.
Oh, no, I was talking about the Rambam. Sorry.
He was born in Toledo, right, in Spain.
What year?
Hold on. It was 1488. He died in 1575. Let's see here. He ended up, right, he passed away ultimately in Tzfat. He's buried in the old Jewish cemetery in Tzfat. If anybody ever goes to Tzfat and you're going to a cemetery, I can't go, but you go. You could go visit the Mechaber's Kever. Right at age four, he was expelled from Spain with his family in 1492 because he was born in 1488, and he settled in Portugal. Right, and then in 1497, there was an expulsion of Portugal, so he went with his parents to Morocco. Okay, and then from 1520 he went to Adrianople, and then later in 1535 he arrives in Tzfat. By route, by passing through Salonika and Istanbul. So he made a lot of stops. And it says here that he completed the Shulchan Aruch when he was in Tzfat.
Yeah.
So there you go. So I stand corrected. So I guess he was already very well that there was no minhag in Eretz Yisrael. He remembers his minhag when he grew up, and he sees that the minhag in Eretz Yisrael is not to make Kiddush anymore. Yeah.
The chevra there. We're all famous.
Right, the Mekubalim.
You know, the Ari was there. Rav Moshe Nuso.
Right. There is a side point that one of the origin stories of the Minhag to stay up on Shavuos night is the story about the Ari and Rav Yosef Karo had a chavrusa together. I think the Ari writes about this. And suddenly the Mechaber started having like a heavenly voice emerging from his mouth. This is a story I've retold, I think, by the Ari. And one of the things that they were talking about was that that they should learn all night, on Shavuos night. So that's one of the origin stories. The other origin story people say is because in the advent of coffee. It could be that there was the merging of those two that made it popular, but the Mechaber was a Mekubal himself. People like to think of him as a halachist, but he was also very into Kabbalah.
I mean, I can't rattle off the names of all the famous.
Shlomo Alkabes, probably, yeah. The Chadodi.
They're all there. And the minute that Rabbi Yosef Karo stepped into the spot, they named him the chief rabbi.
Right. He was Maran. Right. He was our master.
Get this halachot from and understanding
he based it all off of the tour, the work of the tour, which was written by the son of the Rush of Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, and he this the system of the simanim comes from the tour. The Mechaber used the same system, and he would take what the tour did, and he boiled it down to, here's what you should do. That's how he wrote the Shulchan. So and he wrote it. He based the system on the tour. He then picked up from all the sources. If you ever read his work before this, called the Beis Yosef, which is an expansive work, he was very well learned. He learned every Gemara. He learned every Rishon. He knew every Rishon, and he would quote them. The Ramban says this, and the Rambam says that, and this, and he would say, you know, the majority here say this, so I'm going to follow this. But he was obviously world-class scholar. The fact that he could, again, he didn't, you know, nowadays we have everything at the tip of our fingers on a device. He wasn't holding with devices. He was holding it up in his cup. You know, they had manuscripts. It was not like, you know, he would have to remember things. And he,
the Rambam was criticized, but mostly by the Rambam, but
for
not annotating his
correct design. He didn't say, where did you get it from?
Right.
Correct.
He didn't annotate it. So Rambam took it upon himself. He wrote a book called the Kesef Mishnah.
Right, on the Rambam.
He annotated.
Where he gave the sources for the Rambam.
The sources for the Rambam.
Correct. He was, on any standard printing of the Rambam today, on the side, there's the Magid Mishnah, and then there's also the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah was also written by Rabbi Yosef Karo. He went through the entire work of the Rambam, and he basically added, and he cited the sources for the Rambam. He did Rambam's homework. And then
that would take several lifetimes.
Correct. And then he wrote his own work on the tour of all the Beis Yosef. And then he decided people need something to work with, like a set table. You know, and so I'm going to write the Shulchan Aruch, and that way you don't have to be the world class Torah scholar to say, okay, what do I do? So that's what we learned. Anyways, take a look now at the Mishnah Berurah. Speaking of other,
is really truly one of these amazing.
Correct. Is the In the annals of Jewish history, he goes down as one of the greatest.
But Tur is can you explain about it?
The Tur was again, he was a son of the Rush. He had an interesting life because he started out in Germany. Okay, so he was very well aware of a lot of the Ashkenazi customs, but he and his father, his father was the Rush, who was like the chief, thinker, the chief thinker amongst Ashkenazim living in Germany. What happened? The Jews got chased out of Germany, France, that area. They were chased out, and the Rush. There was the pogroms essentially, Rush.
Rabbi of
Württemberg. He was the Rush. He was the Rebbe of the Rush. He got thrown in jail. He never made it out.
So the Rabbi Meir was held for ransom by the Kaiser.
Right, and he insisted that no one should ever.
The Rush. Before he did that, the Rush did raise the.
But the Maharam,
the Rush was a very wealthy man,
right?
And he exposed his wealth to the Kaiser,
right? So he's on the run.
Then they say you better get out of this country because they know you have this kind of money. They're going to arrest you too.
So he was on the run. He left and he went to Spain. And the reason that a lot of Ashkenazi minhagim started popping up in Spain is because the Rush had brought them. When the Rush arrived on the scene, he didn't assert himself. But he was not there. They realized that the Talmud Chacham of the highest order had just flopped down in their lap. His son was actually very much not wealthy. Rabbi Yaakov was not wealthy.
They had to leave their wealth in Germany.
They left all their wealth. So he was very poor. But he was well learned. And he decided he wanted to take all the different opinions. He was very well aware now of all this, the great opinions of the Ramban and the Rashba, who were living in Sephardic lands in Spain. And he takes and he starts to collate different opinions and put them together. But he never paskin. He doesn't tell you, here's the Psak Halacha. He has a lot of reverence for his father. He writes often, Adoni Avi HaRosh, he would do this. But he also gave you what the Ramban would do and what the Rambam would do and what the Rashba would do. So he was starting to collect different Piske Halacha and he put it together. And then the Mechaber took that and he started giving you more depth about each opinion. And then he wrote his own work where he basically said, here's what we do. And he would give you what his Psak Halacha was and he would give you what the Minag was. The Rama didn't know that apparently this guy, Rav Yosef Karo, he was living in Poland. And he didn't know that this other guy was doing what he was doing. Rav Moshe Eshelis was doing the same project. And then he writes in his introduction that the world shook when news arrived that someone had finished this before he finished his project. So he took the Mechaber's work and he wrote some Ashkenazi glosses on it, like, oh, our custom here in Poland is blah, blah, blah. So anyways, That was a happy tangent, but that's sort of what, a little bit of the history here about Chaber.
Because the Rush was kicked out of Germany and it came to Spain, it took the Ashkenaz and the Sephardi.
They melded them exactly in some places. And there was other, sometimes the Rush would he would write to certain. There's interesting minhagim. Once I read a tshuva that the Rush wrote about by Saint Talumata, the addition in the bracha of Baruch Aleinu. He noticed that in Spain that they were holding like the minhag of Eretz Yisrael, the when to make the switch. I think something like that, or I can't remember. He there was something he didn't like. That he tried to sort of, I have some memory that he was trying to deal with this. There was a tension in the sense that he also wanted to be have reverence for them, but they also saw him as a big gadol. So he started, that's why there are some Sfaradim who have, certain, depends where they come from, have sometimes been hugging that line with Ashkenazim. Okay, you'll think of Kitnios, by the way. By the way, it's not inconsequential that. Some people who come from Spanish descent. I once heard Rabbi Sarles talking about this in our school, and he came to talk to kids about the Sephardic minhagim and Beisach. I think he said something to the effect of that those who were influenced by the Rush in Spain, they did have the minhag not to eat kitniot, even though they were Sephardi. But certain Sephardim from different areas, they never heard from the Rush. Some Moroccans, depends where, but some Moroccans
came from there, I guess.
And it may have come from there. So because that came from the Ashkenazim had stopped eating the kidneys. Anyways, so we spread our wonderful minhag of not eating rice to some Spartan too. And peas and everything, and we restricted. And you could have your matzah and cream cheese the whole time. Yeah, Simeon.
I think your tangential side trip is absolutely wonderful. It's scholarly, it's specific, and it brings tremendous amount to the table. I just wanted to tell you, Yasher Koach, I love it.
You're welcome. Okay. I'm happy that we did it then. Okay, good. So let's take a look now at the Mishnah Berurah. Matimo lekatan. Remember, we were supposed to give this little wine to a katan, ideally. That's Kiddush and Shul. So here comes the machlokes. Hine yesh omrim sheyizoher liten rach lekatan shelo higia lechinuch. So the first opinion is that you should give it to a small katan, a three-year-old, a four-year-old who doesn't understand the first thing about halacha. But, if a kid is 9, 10, 11 years old, and you're trying to teach them that on Friday night we don't eat until we make kiddush at home, or wherever we're eating our meal. And it's actually kind of hypocritical to then start giving them the kiddush wine, and you're teaching them, well, it's okay until I tell you it's fine. It's not okay until I tell you it's okay. And that's really confusing from an educational perspective. So that's the first opinion here, which I kind of hear. But aval, and by the way, you're not supposed to feed your children things that are prohibited. Even in midrabanan, I shouldn't give them, certainly got kosher food, but if they're not supposed to be eating right now for halachic reasons, you shouldn't be feeding them. Obviously, fast days like Yom Kippur, they have no obligation to, right? Like, that's a different story. But so that's opinion number one. Aval ha-magin Avram kots the b'shem ha-poskim. The magin Avram quotes the name of many other poskim. The mutter li'tein afil le-katan she'igia le-chinuch. It's permissible even to give it to a katan who has arrived at the age of education. So he tells the kind of kvar she's the kvar sheva, 6, 7 years old. Kol chad le-fum chufe. Everyone according to their sharpness. Every kid, you got to measure the kids, Meaning, you should aware, can they understand the halacha? If they can understand and grasp what it means, then you should try to teach them halacha. The Gemara talks about that once they know how to say, Torah Tzivalanu Moshe, Morasha Akilas Yaakov, you should teach them, that the Torah came from Moshe. That's why it's one of the first, that comes from the Gemara. One of the first songs we teach kids is Torah, 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 it comes from the Gemara. Because that you should teach kids that the Torah came from, that the Torah was given to Moshe, was given by God to Moshe. You're trying to start to instill them the most basic fact. Torah, Hashem gave it to Moshe. But the Gemara gives an example. It's a Masechet Sukkah that the kid is able to wear tzitzis and keep it clean and understand, they don't have to understand, they don't understand why they're doing it. They need to understand procedurally how to do things. Then they should start training them procedurally on certain things. So if they know how to, the Gemara example is tzitzis, lulav. Lulav is also where it comes up. If they know how to shake, so you should give them the lulav and esrog, and you hold it with them and you shake it in all the directions. Same thing, here. If the kid understands can understand the, you know, the idea of not drinking right now, right? And there's some basic level of that knowledge. So you should not be giving them, according to the first opinion. The second opinion says, no, it's fine too. Not a problem. The other rabbi, in fact, the second opinion goes further. On the contrary, if you give it only to a katan who has not arrived at the age of education, yeah, then it's a bracha levatala. The little 3-year-old saying amen to my bracha. The 3-year-old is looking around, holding their little stuffed animal in their hand. They'll only pay attention to me once I give them the grape juice. They're not listening to the bracha. So the person who even drank is not even paying attention. And you could even make the same claim, though, by the way, about the case about Yom Kippur. When I told you on Yom Kippur, the halacha is that you give the wine to the baby. Because I'm joking before the baby was listening carefully. Obviously, that's not the baby can't understand a thing about this. Because if a child is 2-3 years old, they haven't really been trained on how to make a bracha, or how to say amen, or how to listen, or that a bracha is anything relevant in their lives. So it's a bracha levatala, perhaps. And even according to what it says later towards the end of Hilchos Shabbos, the asu lahachil biyadayim lekatan, that in general you're not allowed to feed a child something that is prohibited. To act proactively, give them something that is prohibited. Afilu b'dvarim shasur midrabanan, even if things are prohibited midrabanan. He says here we're allowing it for a few different reasons. It's a minhag. We don't just easily get rid of takanos, you know. So because of where it's that, you know, less than ideal halachic circumstances, so we allow it here. We make an exception here. Generally, we don't like to give things to kids when we otherwise say don't do something in giving it to a kid. We don't like to do that. And I guess also to the extent that you can explain to the child why this is an exception so that they understand, right, that you're drinking right now because of this, but otherwise we don't do it. It's probably good chinuch, given that you have to give it to them. I hope I don't offend anybody now, or at least, but that's the best case scenario, is I educate everybody. You're not supposed to on the Shabbos morning. You're allowed to give kids to eat on Shabbos in the morning before Kiddush, because it's prohibited to cause them pain. Like they have to have an inui, like affliction, like a fast day. For a kid not to eat to have breakfast is not easy. For adults, you're generally not, on a regular day, you're not supposed to eat before you daven. You should daven first, then coffee before, coffee, tea, okay. So you should daven first. So there's a problem, though, that once after you've davened shachris on Shabbos morning, at least I'm taking the words right out of the Shulchan Aruch, I'm not making this up, you're not allowed to eat or drink, even drink of water, after you've davened shachris. So you shouldn't even have coffee and tea after you've davened shachris. You know, you haven't made Kiddush yet. You daven shachris. You haven't made Kiddush yet, though. You really are not supposed to taste anything, even water. Which is why I believe Kiddush Club started. Okay? Because what happens? Shachris is over. So halachah, the Kiddush Clubs, whoever originally started Kiddush Clubs, you know, in the days of the Gemara, they were talmidei chachamim. They understood that you're not allowed to even have anything after shachris. But I don't know about all of you. I grew up in a shul. When I was a kid, davening started at 9, and I feel like it ended at 12. That was not atypical. Now, if it ends at 12, they're starting to think about, I'm not sure about this rabbi. He allows the davening to go 3 hours. You know, like, yeah, come on, rabbi, move it along. Okay, moving. But in my childhood, I remember davening ended typically around 12. It was a long tefillah. Am I crazy? It probably was here too, right?
But I was a kid for sure.
Yeah. And that's what I remember. And there was a mishaberech for this and a mishaberech for that. And the rabbi's drasha. And I'm not saying, this is not a criticism, by the way. The rabbi's drasha was sometimes 40 minutes. It was just a different standard. I think if I'm not mistaken, I remember.
Before ADD.
For sure. Before all his devices happened. Yeah. And I feel like I remember like Rabbi Haskell Lookstein talking even when I was in Smichon that the length of his drushes were they were long and people hear you know that, but that was very typical and standard. What was that?
Joe was his father.
Right, correct. And he would talk about how his father would yeah, the length of I would read I'll read a drusha from the Rabbi Lamb Zichron Livracha gave at the Jewish Center, and I'm turning the pages and I have pages and it's a beautiful thought, but I'm like, wow, this must have been a 40-minute presentation, so shul was longer, okay, for whatever reason. So the question is, I have a child now. And the child is, we're not going to make the child wait until whatever. But even the adult couldn't wait. So probably the origins of Kiddush Club, when is Kiddush Club used? The minhag Yisrael of what the timing of Kiddush Club is?
Haftorah.
Why? Because Shacharis is over. They didn't want to step out during the laning. The laning is, you know, that's the parasha of the week. So the time that was advantageous to probably step out is Haftorah. And, okay, so I'm missing what the Navi says. Who knows the Navi? Anyway, you know, I'm going to get myself in trouble. So that's tongue in cheek saying this, but I think actually it did originate with some halachic sensibility that I can't do it before Shacharis at some point. You know, and now we have to, in order to eat, I have to make a kiddush. And so anyways, they didn't, and davening was long. There are many shuls. Now I'm not even saying things funny, it's jokes. There are many shuls on Rosh Hashanah that before Tikiyah Shofar, after Shacharis is over, and they've finished laning and they finished the Haftorah, the shul pauses and they have a break and they make Kiddush that everyone can eat because davening is long. And really, it's a question whether you can really be fasting for such a long time. And they have a little Kiddush, they make Kiddush, they have crackers and whatever other stuff. Everyone comes back in the shul and they begin Seder Tikiyah Shofar. But I'm not even thinking, I don't think it's just a chassidim. There are many shuls, usually more like shtibels, that have longer tefillah, that do this because they don't want to be fasting all the way until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Because halachically, it's problematic to be not eating, you know, past, to never eaten past katzos. So that's where I, you know, here he's talking about that you, it's,
can I bring you,
it's, yeah. Let's get it all off our chest. I got mine off my chest today. I'm just kidding. Kiddush Club has it's fine.
I'll cover it if I must have take a bottle of water.
Yes, I will tell you. So I will tell you that my Rebbe, Rabbi Weider, he would often, he's an expert Baal Korei. I don't know if you ever listen. If you go to Wayu Torah, he's the laning guy. Okay. So he teaches a lot of bar mitzvah boys. He always told us that he would always tell the bar mitzvah boy when Shacharis was finished, he would actually take a little, you know, those little grape juice bottles. You know what I'm saying? He always say, bring a little grape juice bottle, step out quickly right after Shacharis before Torah reading. And he would tell the kid, make Kiddush. And he'd make Kiddush and he would drink, you know, a cheeksful, which we'll talk about in a second. If you drink a significant amount of the grape juice, that's good. And now he has Kiddush for Malcolm Seuda. Now, once you've made Kiddush, you can drink other things. And it was Shacharis is over. You can drink things before Musaf if you've made Kiddush before, after Shacharis. If you haven't made Kiddush after Shacharis, you can't do anything. So he always suggested make Kiddush quietly on the side. You don't have to make a big deal about it. Make Kiddush quietly on the side. And, well, but if you drink enough of the grape juice, that is the significance. We'll talk about that in a moment. Then that's good enough. And now you want to drink your water. Not a problem. You want to take a break between the aliyah to take a sip. It doesn't present a halachic problem. So really, that's really what should happen if people are having the bottles of water. They should make kiddush quietly, privately to themselves first before they do that, and then you can drink water and there's no problem. But otherwise, it does say that it's the shulchan does say you shouldn't have water. You could try to be malamed tzus by saying, well, they're just clearing their throat. It's like taking a pill. But I personally don't love that svara because.
So what if they make Kiddush in their house for them?
If their family needs it. They themselves may not need to. And then they can go to Kiddush and start eating the crackers. Yeah. Then we'll talk about that. That's the topic that we're gonna have a lot of time the next few weeks on.
What do you deal with this Mizono Kiddush here?
Look, the idea that there's coffee is not so controversial. Like Rav Moshe already said that coffee, you know, before Shacharis is okay, and coffee and tea. It is a Hasidic minhag, okay? And maybe you can recall. No, I'm saying, but maybe you've seen it, you know, when you were in different communities. I don't know, but it's a Hasidic minhag to eat on Shabbos morning, because otherwise you have no kavana. It's so late already that there were you have no kavana. You know, look, I'm like more like in the Litvak tradition. That's where my ancestry is. So I'm a Shulchan Aruch kind of guy, you know. I don't drink coffee in the first place. But if I did, I'd be okay drinking coffee. I don't engage in it. But there's a Chassidish Minhag. So it doesn't come from nowhere. And that's where the idea of the Mizrahi Kiddush, the Chassidim, some Chassidim did this, because otherwise it's very late. And then they can't concentrate and focus on their tefillah without having eaten a little bit. But the idea is that Rabbi Morgenstern was very cautious to say that it should be taken away at a certain point. Once Shacharis is over, it's out, because less man de poly. There's no argument that once you've done Shacharis, even you can't have coffee at that point until you make Kiddush.
Or water.
Or water, exactly. So there's nothing, all that stuff needs to be put away.
So two things. The Kiddush we have in the shul before we go to.
Yeah,
is that
the one in the shul, the main shul? Right. Yes, that's the consider the kiddush b'makom seuda, and it's a justifiable minhag that even though it's not in the same room, there are those who are machbid to make the kiddush in the very same room. And if you learn the gemara and Arev Sachem, you understand why. You understand why that lechatchila it's certainly better to make the kiddush in the actual room. The practical problem is though that if you move everybody in the shul to the other room, good luck getting everyone quiet again. And the fear is that people won't make a kiddush. And then they're just going to start eating. So halachically, the calculation is here, better to make the kiddush with the idea of that we're going to move to a different room to fulfill the seuda, than not make the kiddush and then hope that we, you know. By the way, it happens on sukkahs. It happens on sukkahs whenever you have to make the kiddush in the sukkah. Nobody makes kiddush. Right? The rabbi doesn't make kiddush. I don't make kiddush. You know, or if we do, we in a corner of the sukkah, someone, you know, 15 people are listening. Otherwise, hopefully, everyone else is making kiddush. But you know, I'm not. Nobody's doing a citizen check here. You know, like
we need kiddush. Can drink coffee in the morning before you come to shul.
On any day, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say anything. But Rav Moshe already paskin that the coffee and tea is like drinking water. Water you can have in the morning before you get to shul. So if you're drinking water, but once you daven Shacharis, you can't do that. Yeah.
The kiddush on Shabbos morning.
Yeah.
It should just say brachah on whatever you eat.
It's more prayer coffee, yeah.
It's not really a, you know, like on Friday night you make off
the kiddush. It can be very quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. It doesn't have to be a whole long procedure. That's what I'm saying. If the bar mitzvah boy needs to drink or something like that or whatever. You step out and you make a little quick kiddush, and then he goes back in and he can drink his water also. And again, that's again, I think, again, I was making jokes about kiddush before. I apologize to those who engage in kiddush, but I apologize. But the idea is that, you know, you're making a quick kiddush, right? You're taking a little nosh and you go back, and there's no problem with that at all. And in fact, if it helps your kavana from musaf, that you are able to have a little bit of herring inside of you or a little cracker, it's really not a problem. I think that is why, again, I wasn't trying to joke before, but that is why Kiddush Club, I think, you know, universally became around Haftorah, because it was the advantageous time to chop a little bit of food and drink before Musaf. And that way you have more, you're not like starving. Again, when Shul used to be until 12 o'clock, I have a little sympathy, you know, like it's a long day. I don't know. For me, I get to midday. I'm I don't know. I'm hungry. So I don't know about you. So take a look. Let's continue here. The Mishnah Berurah. He says, I read that line about the kids eating in the morning, right? That it's usher to not give them food in the morning, right? So that's why we have food here for the kids, you know, during groups. We're not making them fast until after shul's over. So, now what happens? This was your question, Tommy. There's no kid in shul. It's Friday night. There's nobody there to, under the age of, forget, there's not a 3-year-old there. There's not a 5-year-old there. There's not a 10-year-old there. I got nobody. So, then the person who makes the kid should actually drink a whole revius. Meaning, so if I ever do this, what I do is I don't take a sip. But the other kids, they take a sip, they take a whatever. Okay. they weren't being, you know, whether they were being yotzei, the they don't need to drink. When you want to be yotzei the mitzvah of the kiddush, you should drink a shir, you're having a significant amount, because that's how you fulfill kiddush, is by drinking. Fine, but here, so I have to drink a revius. I drink, it's about a cheeksful. Shechoshu vimkom suda, because that creates the framework of vimkom suda. Because wine, anything that would require a bracha achas me'ein shalosh, usually it's mezonos, we say ala michya. There are two other cases. What else can we say? Bracha achas me'ein shalosh? Bar Pri Gofen, when we drink enough wine, or certain fruits that are exactly the fruits of Eretz Yisrael. So you can name them: pomegranate, figs, dates, grapes, and olives. Right, but see that barley and wheat is going to get you alamichya category, anyways. So if you have enough wine, a shear of wine, that's already considered b'mkom suda. Which, by the way, Richie, to the Friday night minhag you're saying around town, that will justify it at the very least. Why it's, I'm not saying it's ideal, but at least it's wine. Permissible.
Right.
If A, drink wine as the kiddush, but B, if they put out mazonos, at least it's kiddush b'mkom seuda. If they're only putting out, shahakol foods, like some meat to pick from, that's actually not a good. You could have it there, but it's not good because you need something that will trigger the bracha achas me'ein shalosh for everybody, not just the one who made the kiddush. Now, if everybody is being yotzei through that kiddush, everyone needs to have a cracker or something like that at some point, or a piece of cake. Anywho.
And then make the bracha.
Right. Bracha. So, again, that may not be ideal, though, because it's better to come into your bigger seuda with an appetite. But
there are minyanim that I've looked up.
Not to have that.
There is a connection between the wine and the challah.
100%. That's why I'm not saying I could justify, that happened. But as I said, it might be lechatchila for sure.
Right.
Now, take a look. He says here, one time, I don't want to run too long for you guys. Okay. He says here, that's the thing about the person who does this, who drinks the revius, should make a bracha achrona al gefen v'al pri gefen, and then v'yachsho v'dato latzeis kiddush b'zeh. And I have in mind to be yotzei the mitzvah of kiddush, and it was kiddush b'mkom seuda. So again, I didn't have challah, but I still go have a meal. But okay, at least I'm yotzei kiddush. But b'mikol makom,
the revius of the grape juice.
That's right. Now at least I have kiddush b'mkom seuda, so I'm yotzei kiddush.
Yeah.
Now, I go home and make kiddush. My wife didn't hear kiddush. My kids didn't hear kiddush. Right? The host b'nei beiso, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of kiddush for members of the household.
Yeah.
What was that?
Could you ask your wife to make kiddush?
My wife could make kiddush, 100%. It is in the Gemara that women can be motzi men. This is not me making new halachos here. It's Gemara, I think it's Daf Chof in Brachos, that women, I think it's Daf Chof, can be motzi men. Why? Because just like you say, but it's a positive mitzvah that's time bound. Kiddush is only once a week on a Friday night. But the Gemara says that since women are obligated in the shamor, in the negative aspects, and therefore they are also equally obligated in the zachor, because zachor v'shamor b'divur echad nem. Right, they were stated together by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore women are equally obligated. And it says that Noshim can be motzi men. Okay? But that's not typically what happens. But so certainly my wife can make kiddush on her. I could just stand there. I make kiddush, she can make it on her own. Yeah.
The argument that the woman should make kiddush. You've already made kiddush, you're already yotzei. So now her level of obligation is higher than yours because she has not heard kiddush yet. And you have already made kiddush.
Right.
As
long as the original obligation level was the same, you can always help out. Where this becomes tricky,
if you've already made kiddush, right?
Yeah, no, I've discharged my obligation.
You've discharged your obligation, but your wife has not.
Right.
Therefore, her level of obligation is arguably higher than yours.
Sure. Right. But when it comes to the cholesterol or ravens that I said, which is what allows me to make a bracha for other people than fulfill your mitzvah, it allows me to do so even though I fulfilled my mitzvah. But we have to have started with the same level of mitzvah. An example that's going to come up in a few weeks, always happens every year. On Rosh Hashanah, women do not have an obligation to hear Tekiah Shofar. It is about positive time about mitzvah. They are potter. They would like to engage in the mitzvah and fulfill the mitzvah. They get absolute full credit for it. But if they don't want to, there's no, I missed the positive mitzvah. They're potter. They're exempt.
Well, hearing the shofar.
Yes. So therefore, when the bracha is made in the shul, I'm scheduled to blow in the JCC one day this year. So when I make the bracha at the beginning of yes shofar, I make it. I have everybody in mind. I blow. I'm done. I did my mitzvah shofar. If I then come home, so there have been years when my wife could not make it to shul because we have little children and this and that and whatever. And I would blow shofar for my wife at home. So I would insist that she made the bracha, not me. Because I cannot make a bracha for somebody else who has a different level of obligation to start with. She has an obligation. Better yet, she is not obligated. Therefore, and if we were Sfaradi, she wouldn't even make the bracha. Because women, Sfaradi women, if they want to, let's say, eat in the sukkah on sukkahs, they don't make a leshei basukkah. They don't make a lesilas lulav because they don't make a bracha on mitzvot that they're not obligated in. That they're one because it's a mitzvah that says man grama. They can do the mitzvah and get the credit, but the psak for Sfaradim is that they don't make the bracha. The Rabbeinu Tam says Ashkenazi women can make the bracha. So if they want to shake lulav and esrog, they want to do any mitzvah that's time bound, they can make the bracha. So if I come home and my wife has not heard the shofar, I will tell her she should make the bracha, and then I'll blow. But that's in terms of arvus, it only works. Arvus can work. So I can come home and make kiddush again for my wife. And it's an interesting question, though. If, let's say, whatever happens, my wife is away for Shabbos. I don't know. And it's me and just the kids. And I did this in shul. And I actually don't think I can make kiddush again at home. I'd probably insist that one of my children made their kiddush because they don't have any obligation, to make kiddush. They're minors, and therefore, for me to make kiddush, I could say bar prayer goffin again. That's not a problem. And I could always make a bar prayer goffin. But to say the other bracha, I would just say Hashem Elokeinu and not actually make the bracha, but because I'm already yotze. I cannot discharge them of anything. And therefore, to make a bracha, we bracha levatala. So, something to keep in mind. Yeah. That's why I would almost say that I would insist that, I have a child who's already 9, but he should say the bracha. Let him cut his teeth on the bracha. It's a good opportunity to learn the words. But I don't think I could make it. Again, maybe I would do it by saying Hashem Elokeinu, but I don't think you can do it with Hashem's name. Okay, so he says here, continuing on, v'yivarech achar kach bracha acharona. And you should, okay, I've read that. Sorry. V'komokom yachol achar kach lachol l'kadesh b'yimei. Okay, good. I finished. I read that. Okay. Siv katan beis. Then we'll just finish after this. De'en kiddush v'chulei. Hainu de'en ha'mekadesh yotze b'kiddush zeh kevan she'enu b'mkom su'udasa. Again, if you're just tasting, right, that's why you can't just taste because this is not kiddush v'mokom su'uda. That's why the Mishnah Berurah just explained before. If you are the only one there, you need to drink a significant amount in order for this to count as a se'uda, register as a halachic se'uda. This is always confusing when I taught this to students in eighth grade because they think a se'uda means like a big meal. And se'uda is a very technical term in halacha, right? You have to divorce, what you think of as a se'uda on a just a colloquial manner, just speaking, versus a halachic se'uda. And that, we're going to spend a lot of time on defining halachic se'uda in a few simanim. So he says, "Mishum hachi aser leolitom klum ad shiyakadosh b'mekom seuda." So that's why you're not supposed to taste anything until you're actually having your meal, seuda, and you're making the kiddush in b'mekom seuda. Bebeke nishta. Okay, this is going to take us a little more time. Halacha. So I'll stop here. There's a fascinating halacha. I'll leave you with this question. Really, the Shulchan Aruch earlier in Shulchan Aruch in Kufnun Aleph, in Arachayim, says that a person is not, people should not eat in the shul. So how do you have people who are eating in shul, who are eating and sleeping, drinking and whatever in the shul? Now, also their shuls may not have looked like our shuls. Our shuls have social halls, classrooms. There are shuls that have magnificent structures in Europe. You I'm sure maybe have all, some of you have toured them. The idea that most shuls were like that is not the reality. Most were more akin to shtiblach, and the one room, you know. So the fact that people were eating in the shul is highly questionable halachically. It kind of drives me a little bit nuts that on Shabbos kids are going to kind of run roughshod in the main shul for cleanliness reasons too. But halachically, they shouldn't be eating in the shul. They should be. Maybe it's one thing if it's a lollipop, but that they're bringing cholent in there and they're bringing this in there. The parents really need to keep the food out of the shul for multiple reasons. Cleanliness, certainly, but anyway, so the question is how could it be that people were eating in the shul, in the days when they were orchim were there? So we'll talk about that, the interesting discussion, and then we'll finish this up next time. We didn't get to why they stand. So we'll see. It's actually a fascinating from the Kolbo, why it's a minhag to stand. If you're not being yotze the kiddush, I'm just listening to this kiddush that the rabbi is making. Okay, but the kehila has to stand because I'll give away only one thing that he says here. The Amar Rishonim, shizamoyel ayefos habirkayim. It helps for the tiredness of your knees. You should stand during that kiddush. It helps. You have any knee problems? Come to shul on Friday night and listen to the kiddush.
I know what he's talking about.
Right? So, Friday night, make sure you stand. The Kolbo had this reason. It's good for your knees. It's good. It helps your knees. If you stand at Sfar Kiddush on Friday night in the shul, it's good for your knees. We'll talk about more why next week. But just know that if you're having anyone down there, Simeon in Florida or here, their knee joints are hurting, tell them to come to shul on Friday night. Stand during the Kiddush.
Okay, yeah. Rav?